Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story?
Hello, Weirdsville. Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast. Hope everyone is doing well. Hope everyone is enjoying, at least in our neck of the woods, the northern part of America. We are into the springtime. We're loving it. I know my co-host here, the professor, Mr. Adam Beebe, and I am your other host, Barry Johnston. I know that he hates this time of year because of the allergies, but today it's a nice day here in Oklahoma. We're celebrating. How are you, Professor? How are things in your world, sir?
I am well. Thank you very much. And in fact, today it snowed here.
It snowed. Oh, yep. Shit.
It sure did. Now, it didn't stick around, but it snowed off and on throughout the day. And it's going to be a nice cool week. It's cooling
nice,
down. So it's
nice.
Going to be in the, you know, back into, you know, like the spring, early spring weather, because we're still technically not spring just yet, although spring will spring fully.
Yep.
The day after we release this, and also my sister's birthday, the 20th.
Oh, happy birthday, Lily!
So, yep, happy birthday, sis. And we hope, I won't disclose how old you are, but you are.
If you're 29, then we know the age difference. So. People have heard.
That's right. That's right.
You can draw your own conclusion.
Yeah, but she's also a year older than you.
Which age do you want to go by?
That's right. Well, you know, for 10 days, when we were little, she's a year and 10 days older than me. And when we were little, man, she would just give me, not that it mattered or anything, but, you know, she just used to lord over me the fact for 10 days she was technically 2 years older than me.
That's great.
And I don't know why it bothered me, probably because it was just because it was my sister.
Yeah, of course, know? That's what it is. Yeah, 100%.
And so anyway, so I was just like, I knew as a child, I knew she was gonna rue the day.
Yeah,
because I'm gonna get so much longer of "you're 2 years older than me" out of it than she ever got out.
Oh, the payback is wonderful.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Good. That's great. So, well, happy birthday to your sister, and we love her so much. And, you know, we all grew up together.
Yep.
And have such great memories of our childhood. You know, I've been thinking about that lately because we're coming up on our 30-year high school reunion, and It's crazy. You know, we all grew up together, and, you know, you open up the Facebook or social media and you see people living their lives, and like, I just, I'm happy to see people doing well, and, you know, and see the adults they've grown into, you know, amazing. It's amazing. And, yeah, we can't stop the clock, you know? It just keeps rolling. 30 years, man. We've been out of high school, dude. Can you believe that?
I know. It's hard to believe I graduated at -1 year old. But, yeah, it's true.
You were savant.
Precocious.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah. So, dude, you know, it's funny. I've been watching you know, as I like to do, go back and watch old TV series. And I've gone back and I've been watching Doogie Howser, M.D.
How is that?
Did you ever watch it as a kid?
I did. Yes, I did, man. Okay, I remember I watched a couple of seasons, I know for sure.
Yeah. Because I remember it somewhat, but I also know it was on Sunday nights. And so That would have been, it would have started in, I think, 88. So that would have been, you know, when we were, we'd have Sunday night youth group at church, and yeah. I was all about that. Really enjoyed that.
Yep.
So I didn't get to see much of a Doogie, but I do remember some parts and some episodes and stuff. But dude, I tell you what, I do not remember it being as generally as horny as it is.
You say it, corny it, or horny?
No, no. Horny. Okay. I mean, it is all about the sex there. He and his buddy Vinny are, especially Vinny, very, very obsessed with sex.
Okay. Yeah. It's coming back.
Their virginity, obsessed with just lusting after women.
Yeah.
And, you know, just some of that.
Yeah.
Some of that. And it just really blows my mind, being that it was kind of geared at kids,
right,
and adults, but more at kids. But also, this is the late, you know, 80s, early 90s. So we're still in that kind of late Reagan era, early Clinton era. But, you know, we were still fairly conservative, and this was a Sunday night show.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, they're talking about, always talking about getting it on.
Yeah.
And losing their virginity and such like that. And by no way am I a prude.
Of course.
But I'm just very surprised that there was so much of that in it. But it just goes to show you that, you know, the things, I guess I just didn't watch it very much at all.
Yeah.
As a kid, because, you know, I probably would have remembered that and had a certain fondness in my heart.
You know, it's another great show is The Wonder Years, man.
Oh, yeah.
That was such a great show.
Mm-hmm.
I need to go back and watch that.
I do as well, you know, because I was going to start doing that, and I think I watched a couple of episodes, but maybe I'll do that after I'm finished with Doogie Howser, MD.
Yeah,
and we could start another podcast where we do a Wonder Years rewatch.
There we go. I'm sure there's some
we can discuss.
Yeah, I'm sure there's an audience for that, for sure.
Dude, hey man, you know, people like rewatching.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they like it when people who are actually involved in the shows.
Sure.
You know, take part. One of my favorite podcasts is a rewatch podcast.
Nice.
But people like that, and you know, it does create interesting conversations, and we have a lens of it being 30 years later, whereas, you know, that show was coming on, it was the story of it took place there in the 60s.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like 30 years before, or 25 years before, something like that.
Yes.
And, great. Just a great, I remember that was one that everybody loved. And, teachers even talking about it, sometimes they, about the historical aspect of it.
Right. So. Right.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knows what we'll do here on George Story.
Right.
Podcast network.
That's right. We'll put it on our ideas list for sure. But hey, we've got a great one for you guys today. I mean, this is such a great conversation, and getting to speak with our friend Tom here, he has such interesting stories, and he's from a part of the country that we really enjoy getting stories from, the East Coast, our East Coast friends. Great stuff, man.
That's right, Barry, joining us today from Massachusetts, the Bay State. I had to Google that and find out what state it is.
Very nice, very nice.
But is Tom Stewart, and Tom is a podcaster. He hosts a podcast aptly called My Paranormal Story. He also is a paranormal investigator, and he is just a natural storyteller. And we had a great, as you said, great conversation. He he had great personal stories, and then he informed us a lot about New England history and stuff that he's investigated, and stuff that we really dig and we really enjoyed, and then we hope that you out there in Weirdsville will enjoy too. So let's shift gears and get down to it. Tom, thank you for joining us. What's your weird story?
My weird story? Well, I have a lot of weird stories.
Cool.
Excellent.
So many so that I started a podcast 5 years ago just so I could tell those stories.
Nice, man.
Awesome.
Great, great.
They're mostly of the paranormal nature, spiritual ghost stories, if you want. But I'll tell the one that inspired me to start the podcast because this was the story that I used to tell people all the time. And it was one of those things where I would tell the story to somebody, and the next time I see that person, they'd be like, "Tom, tell them your story, the one you told me." Mm-hmm. And so that's nice. When I was like, you know what, why don't I just make a podcast? If so many people like hearing this story, maybe there'll be even more.
That's awesome.
Excellent.
That's awesome, man.
So my story takes place in Providence, Rhode Island. And I was moving into a house on Cemetery Street. And that should have been a red flag. Start off. But the thing is I had been to this house a bunch of times before. A friend of mine was living there with a few roommates. And so I'd go over and visit, and I got to know some of the roommates and stuff. A couple of the roommates were girls, and their bedrooms were upstairs. And they used to always joke around, or at least they weren't joking around, but we would joke around, that they would say that they saw ghosts upstairs, that the house was haunted and they kept seeing a ghost. And, you know, them being girls and us being guys, we teased them and stuff.
Yeah.
But some months later, maybe even a year later, one of the girls moved out, and I just happened to be looking for a new place. So my friend said, "Why don't you just move in here, take the empty bedroom, you know?" So I moved in to the house on Cemetery Street. And I was staying in a bedroom upstairs where supposedly there was a ghost. And I mean, at the time I had believed in ghosts. I had had many experiences throughout my life, but, you know, it was never a big deal to me when someone said something was haunted or anything, you know. So I moved into the house, and it was probably a good month or two before I just started noticing weird things happening. They start off like most hauntings do, started off very subtle, and then became a little more intense as time went on. So some of the first things I noticed, being kind of the OCD person that I am, I always remember where I put everything. And if you move it a few inches, I know somebody touched my stuff. That's kind of how I am. So in my bedroom, I had two autographed baseballs that I kept in plastic cubes to protect them, you know, and I would keep them on my bureau on the back, towards the wall, almost up against the wall. And on more than one occasion, I came home from work, go into my bedroom, and the baseballs were moved to the front of the bureau. And I always thought that was weird. And I would ask my roommates, you know, what are you guys doing in my bedroom? Are you looking at my autographed baseballs? What are you doing? And they'd all be like, "No, we haven't been in your room," you know? So, you know, thought that was kind of weird. Then I remember another day, I went to go take a shower, get ready for work. And I'm the type of person, like I said, OCD. If I open a drawer, I close it. If I open a closet door, I close it. I close everything. I always close things behind me. And I went and got my clothes out of my bureau, out of my closet. I go take a shower. I come back into my room, and like something out of Poltergeist, every drawer on my bureau had been pulled out, and I didn't go in all of them. And my closet door was wide open, and I'd never leave my doors open. So that kind of tripped me out a little, because at that point I knew my roommates hadn't been in my room, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just still kind of like, what's going on here? I'm still not thinking ghosts. I'm still not thinking haunted. But then as time goes on, a few more things started happening. One morning I woke up and realized I was late for work. My alarm clock never went off, which was strange because of a couple of reasons. One, I had an electric alarm clock with a battery in it as a backup, just in case we lose power.
Yeah.
And it still didn't go off. And I also, at the time, cell phones had just kind of become the normal thing, and they had alarm clocks on them. And I had my cell phone alarm clock set as a backup. and that didn't go off. And all the battery was working and the electricity in the house was on. But for some reason, none of my alarms went off, which is strange. But all three of my roommates also overslept because their alarms didn't go off either. All four of us were in a panic trying to get to work because we were all late because all four of our alarms didn't go off. And some of them had backup battery or used their cell phones too. So it was very strange that all four of us, none of our alarms went off one morning.
Yeah.
So as things progressed, I think the moment I started realizing there was something haunting the house was I was up in the middle of the night, which isn't uncommon for me. And I was just playing some video games, probably 2 o'clock in the morning or something. And I'm at my computer desk in my bedroom. And, you know, I probably have all the lights off. It's probably nothing but the monitor lighting up the room. And to the right of my desk, within reach, was a big mirror on two legs. It's like one of those oval mirrors that's on legs and it kind of pivots like back and forth. I think they call it a shovel mirror or something to that effect. I had one of those there. And as I'm sitting at my computer playing my game out of the corner of my eye, I see the mirror start to slowly move horizontally.
Oh, wow.
Until it was just like that. Oh, and I sat there watching it. And I'm thinking to myself, I've seen enough horror movies to know that when I move that mirror back, there's going to be something in it standing behind me.
Right. Yeah. No kidding.
So I was a little hesitant to move it, but I eventually did. And I slowly pushed the mirror back to the right position. And as I was doing it, it took some effort. It wasn't like the screws were loose or anything. Like it took some effort to do it. So I know it wasn't just from loose screws. And luckily, as I put it back in position, there was nothing behind me in the mirror. But at that point, I was like, all right, there's no reason for that mirror to have moved without somebody physically moving it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's when I was like, maybe something's up here. Some other things would happen. I used to have a lot of bad dreams. They were always horrific dreams. Dreams of like people I care about, family, close friends, dying. Just me watching them die horrifically with my dreams. There were times where I dreamt that I was dead and I'd be laying in my coffin watching people, all my friends and family, come up to my coffin at my funeral. I even found myself waking up in the middle of the night with my arms like this, like I'm laying in a coffin.
Whoa.
Which was weird. My girlfriend at the time, she would sleep over and she hated sleeping there. She always had bad dreams too. And she always would wake up in the middle of the night and she'd tell me that she keeps seeing something in the corner of the room. And she couldn't describe what it was, but it just looked like a dark black shadow in the corner of the room. And it used to scare the hell out of her. So that's when I was like, well, maybe this is haunted. So the big one of all the experiences was I came home from work one night, you know, probably like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. And I went to bed, I go to sleep. And in the middle of the night, I felt something sit on the bed. I thought it was my roommate's cat because my roommate, she used to be in this bedroom. But when one of the bedrooms downstairs opened up, she moved down there. Because she didn't want to be upstairs where it was haunted anymore.
Right.
And she used to tell me about the things she went through up there. So her cat still thought it was their bedroom. So the cat would often come into my new bedroom and lay on the bed thinking he was in his room, which I didn't mind because I love animals. I'm fine with cats. So it felt like maybe the cat had just jumped up on the bed. And you know how you're half asleep, you kind of realize something, but you're not concerned with it. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, whatever it was, I felt it sit on my chest. And when I opened my eyes, I saw what looked like an old man, wrinkly, with a black, like, top hat on, kind of.
Oh.
And he was swinging at me with both hands like he was trying to punch me or hit me. So, of course, I jumped up to defend myself real quick, and I flipped on the light, and there was nothing there. There was no old guy. There was no cat. There was nothing there. Wow. And it just, you know, obviously that scared the hell out of me.
Whoa.
And my roommate, bumps, man. My roommate who owned the cat, I told her about it and she said, oh, the old man. She's like, I used to see him all the time. She said, I would wake up in the middle of the night and his face would be right in my face, almost nose to nose. She goes, and I would jump out of bed. And I was like, okay, yeah, I think that's him. So one of my other roommates was a guy. He was the one that I was friends with before I moved in. And he was kind of a guy's guy, you know, and he didn't believe in all the ghost stuff and the haunting stuff and everything like that. But he'd lived in this house for a long time and he's had roommates come and go. And so I decided one day after work, he was sitting in the living room watching a hockey game or something. And I sat down and I told him, look, you know how all the girls talk about this place being haunted? I think it is. And I started telling him some of the things that were happening. And then I told him about the old guy who sat on top of me and was trying to hit me. And his face went totally white. And he just looked at me. He said, you know what? A few years ago, when that was my bedroom, he said, I swear to God, the same thing happened to me.
Wow.
He said, I thought I was just drunk and was dreaming it, you know?
Wow.
He's like, but I woke up one night because there was, it felt like somebody sat on top of me and was trying to beat me up. And he was the type, like I said, would never talk about stuff like this. For him to admit it was like, blew me away. I was like, wow. So
damn.
A few weeks later, I started deciding I want to learn more about hauntings. I want to learn more about ghosts, the paranormal. I'd already had a very strong interest in it. I did a lot of stuff investigating when I was younger. But this was right around the time TV shows were coming out, like Ghost Hunters and Paranormal State and shows like that. And so I started getting really interested in the paranormal, and I was able to learn about it while I was experiencing it. And I started learning all the things I could do to help control it, to help make it stop, things like that.
Wow.
And that eventually led to me becoming a paranormal investigator, which is something I've done for many, many years. I don't do it as much now as I did back in the day, but I was a very active paranormal investigator for a long time with a crew called Rise Up Paranormal. And we used to do a lot of work with the people from the Ghost Hunters TV show. So that house is what led me down the path of being a paranormal investigator, because I figured now that I've learned all this stuff and now that I have all this experience, I want to go out and help other people with it.
Sure, sure.
And so that's what I ended up doing. But one more final story from Cemetery Street. I was getting ready to move out. I wasn't going to be there much longer. And it wasn't because of the ghost. It's just that, you know, I had, you know, things had gone well and I was moving on to another place.
Yeah.
And I come home and my roommate, he's sitting in the living room again. And there's another guy in the living room with him. I don't know who he is. He's around the same age as us. And I come in the room and he's like, Tom, I want to introduce you to Brian. This is an old friend of mine. Brian, this is Tom. Brian used to live in this house years ago and he used to have your bedroom. And I was like, really? And Brian stood up to shake my hand and he pulled me in close and he said, have you seen the old man yet?
Wow.
And another person just, you know, confirming
so
that they're
old guy. That's four people, five people confirming
four people that at least I know have seen the old guy. And we all described him the same way.
That is.
That's insane.
That is like. So you live in an area, and we've talked about this before, that's so thick with paranormal activity.
Yes.
You know, in this part of the country here, it's more scattered. But the history there, you know, is it's so ingrained in the day-to-day life out there.
Well, I mean, New England is the oldest part of the country.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of Native American history here as well.
Right.
You've got a lot of witchcraft and other type of things that are, you know, obviously from New England. We got Salem and things like that.
Yeah.
So the Northeast is a very rich area for paranormal. And, you know, there's a lot of paranormal investigators out here, a lot of teams, you know, obviously the TV show Ghost Hunters, the TAPS team.
Yep.
Started in Rhode Island. They came from Rhode Island.
Yep.
You know, many of the most famous ghost hunters are from Rhode Island or Connecticut or Massachusetts.
Yep.
You know, if you look at the Conjuring movie, that took place at a house in Rhode Island.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, you've got so many famously haunted places out here, you know.
Yep.
Lizzie Borden's house.
Right.
Places like that.
Yeah. Do you have a grip on who you think or what you think that old man is? Do you think he is a past ghost, or do you think, because we've heard of top hats a lot with
The hat man. The shadow being.
I think it comes from the movie Poltergeist when that old guy walks up to the door and scared all of us when we were kids.
Yes.
But yeah, after I became a paranormal investigator, a few years after I had moved out of the house, that was one of my goals, was to try to get to the bottom of it. And now that I was an investigator, I really wanted to go back to the house.
Yeah.
But none of my friends were living there anymore. Everybody had eventually moved out on their own, just for no reason, nothing to do with the ghosts.
Sure.
So I ended up sending a letter in the mail to the house to just current resident.
Okay.
And just wrote out a letter saying, hey, my name is Tom. I used to live in this house that you're living in right now. And when I lived there with my roommates, we had many paranormal experiences. And if you're experiencing any of those things, I would love to chat with you about it. I'm a paranormal investigator now, and I can definitely help you with it. And I left my email address on there. And somebody ended up emailing me back a short time later and basically just said, we haven't had any experiences. We are believers, but we haven't had anything happen. But if anything does, we'll keep your email handy.
Wow.
And I never heard from it.
Wow, man.
But I did do my research.
Okay.
And the only thing I could come across that seemed likely was the history of the land there, even before there was a cemetery there across the street, was that this whole land was owned by this one guy. And it was just like a big empty land plot and like a plantation or something, probably.
Okay.
And the state wanted to take the land because they wanted to build up the city of Providence further out, and they wanted his land, and I guess he kept refusing to sell it no matter what they tried. So they ended up taking it with something called eminent domain, where somehow through government they were able to just kind of take it supposedly he comes around and haunts a lot of the houses that are on that land now.
Wow.
Is the story that someone told me.
What time frame would that have been?
Probably maybe early 1800s.
Wow.
Close to middle 1800s, probably.
Yeah, that would fit the dress.
It definitely would fit the dress, that the hat and everything that he was wearing.
Right. Yep. Wow. Man.
But I mean, that's just a theory that's just, you know, that I float out there. Who knows? I mean, he could have been somebody who died in the house, or who knows? People who lived there before me could have been doing, you know, black magic or Ouija boards or something, and who knows?
You know? Right.
Yeah.
But it makes for a good story.
Sure, man. You said that when you were growing up, I take it that you've had a lot of these experiences growing up. Did you have ghostly encounters as a kid? When did that start?
I did.
Okay.
I had many different paranormal experiences as a kid, but a lot of times I didn't really realized that they were paranormal at the time. To me, it just felt like something weird, and weird things happened to everybody. And I never really thought about it. A lot of the stories I didn't even remember until I started doing my podcasts, because I would tell a story and then that story would trigger a memory of, oh yeah, I remember that one time when I was, you know, out in the woods, or we went to that old mill or whatever. And story after story just kept coming back to me. It was almost like therapy, you know?
Wow.
And so a lot of my stories from being young came back to me. But the active memories I had when I was a teenager, there was another cemetery, that was pretty close to my house. It's a very big cemetery. It's still there, and it's still active. They're still, burying people there. But it's old. There are stones there going back to like early 1700s. I think there was even some 1690s or something there.
Wow.
Very, very old cemetery. It's called Swan Point Cemetery. And I had many paranormal experiences there. During the day, this cemetery looks like a park. It's beautiful. Okay. They've imported so many different species of trees and bushes and plants and flowers, and it's gorgeous. And there's all kinds of nature and wildlife. They have a little pond, like a little man-made pond with a fountain, and people go there. Literally, they'll have picnics. They'll go there to meditate, even though there's all tombs and burials and everything around you. It's just beautiful. But there's a lot of history to it as well. I don't know if you guys are familiar with H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's buried there.
Okay. Wow.
Oh, wow.
because he's originally from Rhode Island.
Wow.
And I know right where his stone is. And there's many prominent Rhode Islanders, politicians, and famous people from the past who are buried in there. So there's lots of history there. But the history that I've heard about this cemetery, and I don't know how true it is because it's hard to look up, but a historian told me that before this was a cemetery, way back in the day, it was just empty land on the banks of the Blackstone River in Providence. Or it might be the Seekonk River, but it's kind of like the same river that has two different names depending on what section you're at.
Okay.
And the story goes that a lot of witches, a lot of people who practice witchcraft, who were worried about what was happening up in Salem in Massachusetts, they all relocated to the bank of this river in Providence, Rhode Island. The reason being, during the 13 colonies, Rhode Island was the only one that allowed you to practice whatever religion you wanted. They okay. had freedom of religion.
Oh, wow.
And the other states didn't, especially witchcraft. That was considered, you know, obviously up in Massachusetts and Salem, they were, you know, going to kill people over it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of these witches and witchcraft people, they all moved and started their own little village, their own little commune on the bank of the river. And supposedly, during the middle of the night, some people from Massachusetts who weren't too happy with these people came down. And during the night, as they were sleeping, they slaughtered them all and burnt down their village.
Wow.
And so that is supposedly what this cemetery is built on.
Damn.
Oh, wow.
One of the reasons why I think the story may have some truth to it, most stories have at least a little grain of truth, but in the backwoods between the river and the cemetery, it's just a wooded area. And there's little paths you can go down and stuff. People will walk through there. But if you go into the thick of the woods, you will find witches' circles out there. And what really? A witch's circle is, it's basically just a round clearing in the middle of the woods. And you wouldn't be able to see it unless you accidentally stumble upon it or you know where it is. And there'll be a little fireplace in the middle. And then there'll be wow. like little stones where they'll sit or stand. And that's like their spot for the witchcraft.
Wow. Okay.
And that's where they would go to cast spells or do whatever it is witchcraft stuff they do. And I have firsthand seen a witch's circle out there. I went and visited a couple of times. I found it by accident. But I knew this cemetery like the back of my hand. So when I would find things, I knew that they were out of place, you know. And so, yeah, so there was witch's circles back there. I did see people who looked like they were dressed in like witch garb getting ready to go out to one of the circles. You know, when they would see us, they would try to scare us off and we'd run away. So that about the cemetery. And
wow.
I can tell you a quick story about the cemetery. I can tell you a couple if you want.
Sure, yeah. But,
oh, yeah.
We used to, you know, I'm talking, we were 14, 15 maybe. And one of the other legends for the cemetery was that there was a system of tunnels underneath the cemetery. And supposedly the reason for that is many old cemeteries supposedly have either tunnels or small spaces underground because during the winter, they wouldn't be able to dig and bury bodies. So they would store them in these tunnels
okay.
underground until the weather was warm enough for them to bring the bodies back out.
Wow.
Because, you know, because the cold would keep the bodies preserved
sure.
and not, you know, decompose. So I was told that there was this, you know, labyrinth of tunnels underneath this. And being the goonie that I was, I wanted to find these tunnels and explore them really bad. But I could never find any kind of an entrance or anything like that. Until one day, me and my friend, we were riding our bikes. And we were kind of in this one section of the cemetery that we didn't normally go to very much for whatever reason. I don't know. There wasn't a lot up there to see or look at. But we just happened to be riding around, and I saw something behind a couple of tall bushes. It looked like a mound, like a big hill, and there was bushes in front of it. And these types of mounds and hills weren't uncommon because people would build tombs into these mm-hmm. mounds. And their whole family plot would be in there. So when family members die, they open up the door and then they can put the next person in there. And then when the family decides it's full, they would seal it up and that would be their family tomb. And it would usually be in the side of a hill. It almost looks like a hobbit house kind of. Mm. Some wow. of them would be made up nice with granite and all this other stuff. Wow, and some wow. of them were just a boring looking door, you know, in the side of a hill with a couple of, you know, planters or something next to it. But this one was different. Where the door would be, it was bushes. And I'm like, that's kind of weird, you know? So we stopped to look at it. And on the other side of the bushes, there was a big wooden door, a big wooden gate. And in front of that gate was a chain link fence gate, which was much more modern than the door on the other side of it. And this gate had a kind of old, but a really sturdy padlock keeping it locked. Mm-hmm. This did not look like a tomb area for bodies, but for the most part, to me, it looked like the entrance to the tunnels. And I was like, I got to get in there. We got to get this door open.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're trying to, you know, use rocks and sticks and whatever we can find to try to get this lock to break open, but it just wouldn't. And I can remember shaking the fence like, you know, we got to get this thing open, you know. It wouldn't budge. So we decided, let's get out our bikes. We'll ride back home. We'll get some tools. We'll get some hammers and pry bars and hacksaws and whatever we can find in the garage, throw them in a backpack and come back, and we're going to break into this thing. You know, now we've got flashlights and we're ready to go. And we come back to the cemetery. And like I said, knew it like the back of my hand. And we went back to that section. We went back to that hill where the bushes were. And on the other side of the bushes was nothing. The door, the gate, it was gone. It wasn't
Whoa.
There anymore.
Whoa.
It was just a grassy, dirty hill now with bushes Whoa. In front of it. And I mean, I stood there and looked around at least a dozen times, like, I know this is the spot. Like, I know it is. And I still had rust on my hands from trying to get the lock open and trying to shake the gate. But the door was gone. It wasn't there anymore.
Oh, my God.
It was like it gave us one chance to get in and we didn't get in.
Damn.
That was it.
That is wild.
Of all the times I searched for it again, I never found it again. Never, ever found it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a cool story, man.
Yeah.
That is a cool story.
Yep.
Yeah, those cemeteries, man, over there, I just marveled at, because we don't have anything like that here. Nothing that old. And we would stop, like, on our trip up there, you know, that we took a couple of years ago, like, going up, hugging the coast up through Maine, like, we would stop at, if we saw an old cemetery, we'd stop, you know, and check it out. Mm-hmm. Some of those headstones are so old, like, and faded, you know, you can barely make out the, you know, the dates and the names, and it's just weathered, and, like, you just get that feeling, man. It's like, there's been some stuff going on here for a long, long time.
Yeah. Yeah. You can get spooked out real easy up here in New England if you go to the right spot.
Yeah.
Yep. But Swan Point, I'll tell you, I always tell people, go visit it. Visit it during the day. It's gorgeous. It's really nice. And when you go in there, you just get a good feeling in there. You don't get a spooky cemetery feeling. You know, if you go with me, you probably will, because I'll tell my spooky stories. But, I'll give you another weird story from the cemetery real quick.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, like I said, we used to ride our bikes around in there all the time. Everybody from around the surrounding neighborhoods, we'd all end up riding our bikes in there like that. And I remember I had one friend from high school. When he would be riding around with us in the cemetery, there was one part of the cemetery where it hadn't been used yet. It was just empty grass. The cemetery, you know, people were buried and it was slowly filling up going in that direction. So on this side of the cemetery, there was nothing there, but it was prepared for the future. So on one end of this just empty plain of grass, there was a big statue of an anchor, like a ship anchor, maybe from a battleship or something. It was huge. And you know, it was probably 15 feet tall or something, and it was on a big cement block, and it was just sitting there. It was just there to be a decoration in the cemetery, but it looked out of place because there's no graves around or anything. You know, nobody even comes over to this section. And none of us really, you know, made a big deal about it. But my one friend, he always wanted to stop and look at it, or let's take a break here. And he would sit on the cement block underneath it. And he always wanted to be around that anchor for some reason. And we never, you know, it never really dawned on us why. But then in my senior year of high school, he was in a car accident and he died. And he's literally buried right in front of that anchor now. That's where his gravestone ended up being. It's, you know, maybe 10, 12 steps away from where he's buried now in that cemetery. It was almost as if he knew.
Wow.
And we were at his funeral literally saying, you know, he got buried next to his favorite anchor, at least, you know.
That is amazing.
Yeah, but it's like a wow. goosebump kind of a thing that
yeah,
you know
man.
Yeah. had no, some I, weird attraction to it.
I got goosebumps just hearing it, man. That yeah. is just
yeah,
yeah.
Did you ever do any investigations or anything out there at any cemeteries or
at Swan Point? No, because they have very serious security there. They're okay. always watching.
Okay.
They've got like trip lines that they know someone snuck in. They've got cameras and everything these days. Back when I was 14, 15, it was a little easier for me to sneak in there at night. And I would always sneak in there at night with my friends and give them a good spook.
It sounds like your Goonies crew might have been yes. why now there is so much hiding.
We might have been part of it. The security would eventually find us and throw us out. Or we'd run away. But the reason why there's real serious security there now, I'll tell you why. And this will be like another story for you. There's a tomb there called the Sprague Tomb. And it's like I was saying, it was one of those tombs that's built in the side of a hill, except this one mm-hmm. is huge. It's the biggest one in the whole cemetery, built into the side of a hill. And on top of it, it says Sprague, and underneath it says Amasa Sprague. He was a former governor of the state of Rhode Island many, many moons ago. And his whole family is buried in this tomb. He and his son were very much into dark magic, black magic, whatever you want to call it, secretly, oh, wow. of course. But when they designed this tomb for their family, on the top of it, where the hill is, you could walk around and go on top of it. And it was just like a big area where he had it designed so that there was a circle on top of the tomb made of tall, tall trees, like big pine trees that went way up into the sky. And they just made one big circle. And the branches came down to about 15 feet, and then it was just tree trunk. And the branches would drape over so that on the inside, it was almost like a cave on the inside of these trees. And on the inside of these trees, if you went inside, there would be five more trees. And it was just the trunks of the trees going straight up through the top of these branches. Damn. Until it became branches and would cover the top. So yeah. it would be dark inside there. Very little light got in. And it would always be like chilly. No matter what time of year it was, it'd be chilly inside this little area of trees. And the way those five trees were set up, they were set up to be a pentagram. They were the right. 5 points of the okay. pentagram.
Yeah, wow.
And there would be a pentagram drawn into the ground with what looked like ash, lots of ash. And a lot of people, Satanists, witchcraft, black magic, what have you, they would go there knowing who Amasa Sprague was, and they would do all kinds of rituals and spells and curses and stuff, because we would go in there all the time as kids because we were curious. And you'd see where somebody had done some digging, and if you dug there, you'd find something like someone's personal item that they were probably trying to curse, you know, oh, things wow. like that.
Wow.
And there would be symbols drawn into the trees and drawn into the ground and just really weird stuff. And I remember a friend of mine, he came with his dog. He had like a German Shepherd, very well-trained German Shepherd. Like, he didn't have to have it on a leash. The thing just went wherever he went and listened to every command. But when we went into those trees, the dog would not follow him. He would run around in circles barking on the outside. He was too afraid to go in there, which was very, very strange for this dog. It was a very weird place to walk into when you'd go into it. But security kept having a lot of trouble because these people were sneaking into the cemetery at night and going there to do these rituals, and they didn't want them in there. So security would have to kick them out, chase them down, and all this other stuff. So eventually they asked a representative of the family, can we do something to try to make them stop? So somebody had the idea of, let's chop one of those trees down. Maybe if they can't form the 5 points of a pentagram, maybe it'll take away the allure of that spot. So they chopped one of the trees down, and that one tree was now just a little stump. You could just barely sit on it. You know, it was only an inch or two out of the ground. And it didn't make much of a difference. What ended up happening was these people would still come here to do their rituals, but one person would put themselves into a meditative state standing on the stump and would become the fifth point again, is
okay.
what I'm
talking about. Oh, wow.
Okay, wow.
So it didn't really help. So I guess the way the story goes is one night, the police, I guess, got into a scuffle with them and some people got hurt. So security upped their game. They got security dogs. They got like 3 or 4 security dogs to work with the security guards to help them scare people out of the cemetery at night. And I guess one night, as they were chasing some people, the dogs got a hold of a couple of these people, may bit them or could scare them or whatever. And I believe this was, this was like a few days before Halloween when this happened. So the security and the dogs chased the people out of there, and a couple of them may have gotten bitten or something because they were very pissed about it. And on Halloween night, those people, the Satanists, whatever what you want to call them, they snuck into the cemetery and went and slaughtered all the security dogs.
Oh my God.
Brutally.
Wow.
As like a payback for, you know, you're going to send dogs after us, we're going to kill the dogs. And that's what ended up happening.
Wow.
And it was a real big deal. I remember driving home that night and I just happened to be driving by the cemetery. I purposely was driving by because I'm like, it's Halloween. Maybe we'll see some people sneaking in or something, you know? And because now I'm like 16 or so, 17. And as I drove by, I saw nothing but cop cars everywhere. And I was like, oh my gosh, something's really going down. And then I found out that it was these people came back to get the dogs. So that was that. The cemetery told the family, look, we're taking out the entire thing. We're taking out the trees, the bushes, the whole thing is coming out.
Wow.
And the family was like, do what you have to do. So they did. They wiped it out. All the trees got removed, even the stumps, all the bushes. It's now just a plain, just grass is all there now. It's just a flat piece of land and grass. You never would have known this thing was there.
Wow.
The tomb is still there, but the tomb now is cemented closed. It doesn't have a wooden door on it anymore like it used to. And they haven't had any problems there since.
Wow.
Jeez. When roughly was this? What year?
This would have to be, I'm going to say 88, maybe.
Okay.
87, so 89, like something like that.
Right there in the Satanic Panic era.
Yeah.
All of that, man. So people were freaking out already about things that weren't satanic.
So one of the legends of that tomb, of the Sprague tomb, was that the inside of it was set up like a church, and the head of the family, Amasa, was buried. His burial was like right where the headstone would be, right at the top, like right at the front of the church. And then all the family members were like where the pews are.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Wow.
And supposedly it was set up like that to look like a church. And so I'd never been inside it, so I never knew. But years later, many years later, when I became a paranormal investigator, one of the places I investigated was Sprague Mansion.
Oh.
Which is where this family originally lived.
Wow.
And many generations lived. And it's a very famously haunted mansion. And now it's more of a museum. People will do events there and stuff. There's a caretaker who lives there, but the main part of the house, nobody lives there anymore. But we did many investigations there. They've been on a couple of different TV shows and stuff there. And I got to talking to the caretaker, and I told him about my experiences as a kid at the Sprague tomb. And one of the things I told him was, I've heard that the inside is set up like a church. And he said, oh, yeah, it is. He goes, I've been in there. I was like, really? He's like, yeah. He's like, I had the keys before they cemented it closed. He goes, I had the keys to get in there. And anytime a family member wanted to go pay their respects, I had to go with them to open it up for them. Wow. He goes, so I've been in there. He goes, I have pictures. And he went and grabbed a couple of Polaroids and was showing me pictures of the inside of the tomb before they sealed it.
Wow.
And sure enough, was set up like a church, kind of.
Is it like creepy, like I picture in my mind?
No, it wasn't really creepy. Okay. I mean, it was creepy because it was a tomb, but it wasn't creepy like a horror movie creepy.
Yeah.
It just didn't look set up like you would expect a tomb to be set up, you know?
Was the mansion or the tomb full of like arcane symbology and stuff that have like all sorts of creepy things, or was
look very closely, but from what I could tell, it just looked like, you know, the cement blocks where their coffins were placed were in place, and looked like there were some decorations, but it just looked like normal things like planters and stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
There were no windows or anything because it's underground, so So it just kind of looked like a normal granite tomb on the inside, but it was like a rectangle, like a church would be.
Okay. Did you get anything from the mansion when you guys did your
investigation? Sprigg Mansion. Yeah, we caught, we had some experiences while we were there, and we caught some really interesting EVPs when we were there. We had an EVP of a little girl who sounded like she was in the bedroom playing.
Wow.
And at one point we had two investigators. I'm trying to make sure I'm getting the right investigation because I was on so many. I'm pretty sure this is the one where one of the bedrooms, we had sent two investigators in there because the legend was that there's a little girl in there. And like I said, one of the recordings we caught was of what sounded like a little girl playing. Like, you know, a little girl will play and kind of sing and talk to herself. Yeah, That's what it sounded like.
Wow.
And you can hear the two investigators talking and not even hearing this little girl, not even realizing that it's there. And then at another point during the night, we have two investigators in there. They're both female. And the EVP we caught was of a little girl going, "Mommy, mommy, mommy," like a little girl calling out for her mother. And nobody heard it. We heard it on our recordings later.
Wow.
Yeah.
What time period did they occupy that house?
Oh, going way back, 1700s. The family was there.
Wow.
Who knows what? Yeah. Amasa Sprigg was governor. And then he had a brother who was in the government, state government. He had a son who I think became governor as well. And one of them, I think it was the son, he was murdered. And he's actually the reason why they don't have capital punishment in the state of Rhode Island anymore.
Wow. Like,
they don't put people to death anymore.
Okay.
Because what had happened was he was walking. He had, you know, back then you walked everywhere, and he was walking to his farm, which was like probably close to a half mile, maybe three quarters of a mile away. He was walking to his farm. It was New Year's Day. Was it New Year's Day or Christmas Day? I think it was New Year's Day. And he had walked to his farm, did his business, and then he was walking back home, and somebody shot him with a rifle.
Whoa.
Murdered him. And nobody really knew who it was. But back then, the Irish were not very liked, you know.
Yep.
At every point in our country, there are people who are not very liked. And at that time, it was the Irish. The Irish had just come out of being treated almost like slaves at the time. Irish had come over here as immigrants, and they were basically used as cheap labor to help build things everywhere. And they were just starting to get their own freedoms here. And in Rhode Island, this one Irish man, he had opened up a bar, and he was doing well for himself because he was smart. There was a mill in Cranston, Rhode Island, a big textile mill, and he opened his bar right across the street. So all the men who worked in that mill would go to his bar after work. Sometimes they would go on their lunch breaks or during the day to his bar.
Yeah, yeah.
And the owner of the mill was a Sprigg family member. And the Sprigg family member was mad about all his workers getting drunk at this Irish guy's bar across the street. So he took advantage of his family connections and he had the governor take away the liquor license for that bar, and the guy went out of business. So everybody naturally assumed he was the one that killed Amasa Sprigg to get revenge for ruining his business that he worked so hard to build.
Wow.
But there was literally no evidence. The only evidence they had was nobody could find his rifle, because everybody back then had a rifle, and it was like, you had one rifle. Everybody had one rifle. And for some reason, he wouldn't produce his rifle. He said, "I don't know where it is." And they were like, "Well, that's very suspicious, you know?"
And
other people said things, testified saying that they heard him talking about wanting to kill him and stuff. You know, back then you didn't have any DNA. You didn't have much to go on for evidence. It was basically hearsay. And the judges, so back then I think they used judges and not juries, but they decided that he was guilty even without any evidence, and they hung him to death.
Wow.
And then not too long later, they found out who really did kill him, and it wasn't that guy. And that led to the state of Rhode Island banning capital punishment because they had already killed somebody by accident that wasn't guilty.
Wow.
And so to this day in the state of Rhode Island, there has never been a death penalty for any reason. It's because of that family. Yeah.
That is amazing. What a great story, man. That is, damn.
Yep. And all those stories are on my podcast. All
yeah, let's episodes. Talk about that, man. So you
yeah, what's the name of the podcast?
It's called My Paranormal Story. That's pretty simple.
Nice, man. And you've been at it for about 5 years?
Yeah, 5 years. I mean, not consistently like I should be. Okay. But, you know, I had some, you know, here and there things got in the way and I may not add an episode for a month or 2 months.
Yep.
Sometimes I'd get to a point where I don't know what to write about. I don't have any stories. And then after a while, oh yeah, I remember this. And then I write that story. And then I also tell some stories about the many investigations I've been on too as a paranormal investigator. So I've got stories about when I visited the Conjuring House, stories about Sprague Mansion, stories about Lizzie Borden's house, all the famous haunted places in southern New England I've pretty much been to, and many that you probably never heard of.
Did you do an investigation at Lizzie Borden's?
I did not.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I stayed there one night. And had my own experience.
Wow.
But I do know people who have investigated there. And if you listen to that episode on my podcast, one of my investigator friends, he comes on to just play a little EVP that he caught. And they're like 99% sure that it's Lizzie Borden's father that they caught a recording of talking.
Dude, when I was there, the basement gave me the creeps, man. I don't know what it was, but it was the rest of the house was, you know, it was cool. And like, it's like stepping back into time. But man, when we walked in the basement, I was just like, okay, this is
yeah, creepy. It's very eerie.
Yeah.
Well, old houses like that all have such creepy basements. Though.
Yes. Especially built back then, man. Because they're just like, you could kind of see where they just roughly shoveled things out. I lived in Pennsylvania and I worked at an old inn that was there, built in 1750. And in the basement, it was like the plastered walls, but you could see like shovel marks and like, that was the same thing. It gave me the creeps every time I was down there. And I was a bartender, so I had to go down there. That was where we kept the cooler for the kegs. So I would have to go down. I had no choice but to go down there, man.
And then
but
you run back up the stairs.
Yeah. Yes, man. The basements, old basements in that area are just creep factors through the roof.
I've been in a lot of creepy basements and creepy attics as a paranormal investigator.
I bet, man.
That is awesome, man.
How can people get in touch with you, man? You have social media and stuff like that, Facebook?
I do. You can look up My Paranormal Story. It's on Instagram and also on Facebook. And the podcast itself, My Paranormal Story, it's on pretty much every podcast network. So you can find it on Spotify and Apple and Google and all of those. It's also a YouTube channel now, too. And it's not, you know, it's not your typical podcast. It's not interviews. It's just me telling a story like I just did with you guys.
Cool, man.
It's just me by myself narrating a story. They're all short stories.
Yeah.
20 to 30 minutes tops. So it's
killer.
It's nice to just throw it on when you're driving or if you're, you know, you're sitting at home and you just want to listen to something spooky.
Yeah.
I put some nice creepy music in the background.
Nice.
An occasional jump scare with a sound effect.
Nice.
You know, I try to do it up for everybody.
You're a great storyteller, man.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
No, this has been awesome. It's always fun to have people on that, like, you can tell that, like, they've told these stories and they know them front to back, you know, and you're able to paint a picture, and it's great.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal, man.
Yeah. I'm at a point where I'm like, did this really happen or am I making this up? Like, I've told this story so many times. Have I embellished?
Yeah,
like,
man.
It's happened 30 plus years ago.
Right. That's cool, man.
But either way, people just like to hear a good spooky story. So.
Sure.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. We definitely like hearing stories, any stories really. That's part of what we grew up with, being around a lot of storytellers. And we definitely, the spooky ones are always fun. You know, you get a little bit of a goosebumps going and a little bit of chills. And we love that stuff.
Yeah, that's one of the cool things is on my podcast, I encourage people to email me and tell me their personal stories.
Nice.
Because I'd like to hear stories too. So, yeah. You know, at least a couple times a week, I get people sending me their stories, and I get to enjoy them and comment back. And, nice. And some people like to ask me questions, you know, what do you think this was or whatever.
Yeah.
It's great. I have a really interactive audience in that way, which is cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I'm excited about it. But I'm over 70 episodes now, which isn't a lot for 5 years, but like that's I said, sometimes there was gaps.
Yeah.
But it's a great binge, you know.
You
go on there and you listen to a couple in a row or a few in a row, and before you know it, you've listened to them all, and you're yelling at me to make more.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Well, we've been going for 5 years as well, and we've got a nice audience, and so I'm sure they're going to come check your stuff out, man. And we'd love to have you back. I know you got a lot of stories, man.
Absolutely. I'd love to come back. And you know what? This is such a great idea, your podcasts, just to have people tell their weird stories. Like everybody's got a story, you know? So that's a great idea.
Yeah, man.
And I like it. You guys just let the people go and tell their story. You don't like interrupt too much or, you know, overanalyze things or try to call them out on bullshit or something.
No.
We're not, you know, we're not trying to prove or disprove anything. Your story is your experience. We just want to hear it and enjoy it and have fresh ears. Like our listeners, because we don't know what it is going into it.
Yeah.
And so that's why, you know, being able to react and ask questions in real time is what makes it fun for us. And like you were saying earlier, sometimes, you know, or quite often, really, when you're telling a story or talking about it, you'll remember something else. And that happens quite often here on our show where people come in with one story and they're like, Oh, and I remember this. And then, you know, which leads us down a whole other avenue.
If we talk long enough, I'll probably end up remembering some story I haven't told yet.
That's great. Yeah. That's awesome, man. That's great. Yeah. So, again, thank you for taking time out to come hang out with us and talk. And, you know, we always feel like after these, we've gained a new friend, and I feel like that, man, with you. It's like,
for sure.
It's a nice.
I definitely do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to come back again sometime. If there's a certain, like, you know, check out my episodes. If there's a certain place you want me to tell a story about or a certain event or something, or, you know, there's an anniversary of something, just let me know and I'll be happy to come back.
Awesome, man.
You know, I love doing shows like this.
Hey, you know what we need?
What's that?
We need a new ad for our merch store.
Our merch store.
I've had a few people reach out to me and ask me, just how do we get What's Your Weird Story merch?
Huh. How do we get that What's Your Weird Story merch?
What's-your, spelled Y-E-R, dash, weird, dash, story, dot myspreadshop.com.
That's what's-your, spelled Y-E-R, dash, weird, dash, story, dot myspreadshop.com.
That's correct. Get in touch with us. Go buy some merch. We got some cool stuff.
Yeah, dude. And you know what? If any of our listeners out there has some really cool ideas or has some really cool What's Your Weird Story type art that they want to see on a t-shirt, get a hold of us. Maybe it'll happen.
Another man in the hat story, which we've had, you know, more than a handful of those stories over the years. And just I love them when we hear them.
Yeah, dude. And especially the variations. But his course being that he saw the face. And so it seems like it's a more localized, you know, with him seeing it. And of course, the other roommates seeing it all in that one particular room.
Wild.
Dude.
Woo.
Well, Tom, thank you for showing up and for being here and for sharing your stories, because those were great, man.
Yeah.
The Hat Man, the Sprague family, all of their crazy stuff with the their tomb and the trees and
that
the mansion
was trippy.
And
yeah.
That's wild, dude.
For sure.
It, you know, I wonder if because it makes sense that that happens, you know, there in Lovecraft country, sure. in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and all that, New England.
Yep.
And it makes me wonder about what kind of stuff like that happened, if anything like that happened in our home state of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just remember there was there in Oklahoma City, there was that one place that was I forget the name of what it was, but it was a building and it was abandoned for most of the time that we were there, and it was in the 80s. It was over by Penn Square Mall, and I can't remember what it was, but it was supposed to be that's where, you know, the Satanist went.
Right, right.
And
there was a lot of Satanists back then, right?
Yeah, of course there was. There's so many Satanists, man. Yeah. Satanists everywhere, man. Yeah. you couldn't walk your dog without accidentally picking up a Satanist rather than a, you know, your dog's turds or whatever. So,
it's so
Satanists everywhere, and, you know, all in the air. It was the season of the Satanist. That's their real high glory days of not existing, really. But, you know,
An easy an easy target.
Easy targets, yes, you know, but at the same time, you know, the ones he's talking about with the Sprague family and their kind of magic, their dark arts. Now that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
But I
love it. Yeah. So it just that's where my mind goes when I think of the East Coast, you know, that stuff. And it's and it intrigues me, and I love the stories because, you know, history is just different over there. It's where the, you know, the country began, and mm-hmm. there's just so much folklore and you know, these local stories about mm-hmm. stuff that, you know, I think that maybe, you know, I don't take it for granted, but maybe some people in those positions would take it for granted that those stories are just so easily available. I mean, again, Tom was a great guest, and you know, we got on, we didn't know what we were going to talk about. We just start talking, and then, you know, before you know it, we've got an hour of just conversation and stories, and it's just so cool to be able to walk in someone else's shoes for an hour. And we want to talk to you. We want you to come onto the show. We want you to share your stories. We want to have a discussion about, you know, maybe things in your life you think are normal. I can guarantee you that there, you know, there's something unique about your perspective, your point of view, and your story.
Yes, bring your shoes. Let us try them on and walk in them. You know, whatever they may be.
Size 11s, please.
Size 11. Yeah, I am a size 12 or 13, depending on the company. You know, I could probably do heels, but you know, I would have probably squeezed my big giant.
I would love to see that. Oh, I would pay.
Think I could do it, man. I think I have that talent. I'm not graceful by any means, but I think I could probably figure out how
you to absolutely
walk in some, you know, some stilettos. Yeah,
absolutely.
But hey, if that's what it takes to get you to come on and share your stories, we'll both do that. You know, we're willing to bend a little, I guess. Maybe.
Hey,
I
now.
A,
yeah,
I don't
speak
know if that's
for yourself.
A good expression for it, but, you know, we're willing to, you know, listen, bend an ear. How about that? We're willing to bend an ear to hear your stories and talk with you and share some time and be amazed by your experiences and your regional knowledge and stuff. You know, doesn't have to be ghosts, doesn't have to be aliens, doesn't have to be Bigfoot. We do love those. We got some true crime stories that are coming up that are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got some, we got a lot of good stuff coming down the road, but
for sure,
just to, you know, any kind of story, all kinds of stories. We love to hear them. We love talking with people. We love talking with you, and we love hearing back from you. And, you know, sharing is part of our, you know, human experience here on this planet, or not necessarily always human experiences. as we've you know, discovered from past guests. So
yes,
we just love talking to everybody and hearing your stories and your experiences and just, you know, marveling at the wonderful diverseness that this universe has to offer.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, you wrote it out for me, but
shit, the shit I did.
All right, everybody, contact us with your stories, contact us with your comments, your questions, or just to say hi. Send us an email at wywspod@gmail.com or Instagram, What's Your Weird Story, Facebook, What's Your Weird Story. You can find us out there. We love interacting even off the podcast, and we look forward to hanging out with you guys in the future, and also, you know, sooner than that. I guess I don't know what sooner than the future is. I guess it's now. The near future. That would be sooner than necessarily the future. Semantically, I think, right?
I think so.
Anyway. Anyway. That seems like a really good place to stop and let you go, so that it will be actually the future that next time we are hanging out. So take care, good friends and good people. And other things of Weirdsville. We will see you next time. Until then, be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Until next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.